It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Letterman Row, the Letterman Row Live Summer Edition. Andy Backstrom on the other side of that screen. But you guys already knew that by now. It's Spencer Holbrook. It's Andy Backstrom. Andy, how's it going, man? It's pretty slow right now for Ohio State. Little portal activity in and out. And now it's kind of the doldrums of the offseason. We've officially hit that point.
Yeah, it feels like summer, but there was like tornadoes, I guess, last night. So weird weather all around, but happy to talk Ohio State football. I was saying earlier this week, it's been weird that the Ohio State basketball transfer portal has been more active than the Ohio State football spring transfer portal. But certainly a lot to talk about still with this roster, which we believe is the most talented since at least 2019.
Yeah, exactly. I saw that On Three's Jesse Simonton, national college football reporter, is doing his rankings of team of units, and Ohio State second quarterback unit, first running back unit and first wide receiver unit wasn't in the top 10 of tight ends, but I don't know if we expected that, but it just kind of goes to show how talented this roster is. Andy, any thoughts on those lists that Jesse's kind of rolling out, the early stages? We've got all the offensive skill position units out. Any thoughts on those before we get started here?
Yeah, first of all, hard job for Jesse. That's always a hard one to do. I mean, you're trying to chronicle across like, what, 134 programs is it now? And trying to pinpoint 10 schools for each position group. The wide receivers are so interesting to me because next year, I mean, think about the potential you could have. I was talking about this on our message board on lettermanrow.com. Think about the potential you have with, you know, Jeremiah Smith coming back, Carnell Tate coming back, and then Brandon Innes. This is for coming into 2025, I'm talking about. Already we're excited about what it could be in 2024. But looking at, you know, if all those players progress, develop, and perform the way we think they will even this season, think about what it will be a year after that. So I think it's just pretty crazy. We talk about this pipeline that Brian Hartline has built. Although you've mentioned a good point throughout the offseason, and I think that we've touched – shows that the depth at wide receiver maybe isn't as strong as in years past, maybe just less proven than in years past. They're going to need guys like Jaden Ballard to step up. You know, even someone like a Kojo Antwi is good to have in the building still. You know, there's definitely been, of that 2022 class, only one remains, and that's Kojo Antwi. So, like, there is maybe not the depth that they've had in years past, but the star power is certainly there.
Yeah, I think the dearth is out wide, right? Because we think Emeka Ibuka can play out wide, and he's going to show us that a little bit in the fall, just like he did in the spring. But then it's Jeremiah Smith, it's Carnell Tate, and maybe Jaden Ballard. But Jaden Ballard, you know, he started to show some things those last 2 weeks of spring camp. But other than that, you know, nobody was really blown away by his progression in his fourth year. And then Kojo Antwi. Meanwhile, on the inside, or I guess Jeremiah Smith's lumped in there too, but Jeremiah, I think, can do everything. Meanwhile, on the inside, though, you've got Emeka, you've got Brandon Innes, you've got Bryson Rogers, you're going to have Mylon Graham. Like, I think the inside looks a little bit more secure right now than the outside, especially if Emeka ends up playing more on the inside. So it's interesting because that may be where we can start this entire conversation is where, you know, it's the crux of the entire video here that we're going to do, the summer to-do list. And maybe we can start there at wide receiver, because I think Ohio State really does have to bring some of these younger guys along in that wide receiver room, Andy, to make sure that it's got the depth. Because at every position except wide receiver this year, this spring, Ohio State talked about needing the depth to play 16, 17 games. And then everybody just says, well, wide receiver will be fine. Well, last year, Emeka Buka was on the shelf for a while. Last year, Marvin Harrison Jr. Rolled that ankle against Notre Dame and made us all, you know, our hearts all skip a beat. So, you know, Julian Fleming was basically never able to stay healthy. Brandon Ennis has already been on the shelf once this spring. So, like, you've got to develop some of these younger guys to be ready and ready instantly.
Yeah, absolutely. And Bryson Rogers is a guy that we were both really interested to see in the spring after being in the portal for a minute and then coming back, and was really impressive for most of spring practice, and then just didn't have a great spring game, which is unfortunate because it didn't really get to showcase everything that we had seen. But at Student Appreciation Day, I felt like he tore it up, and he's someone on the inside that could maybe even contribute, you know, give you 10, 15 catches next season in 2024. And I think that that's got to be really encouraging for Brian Hartline and Chip Kelly and Ryan Day and everyone around that offense. But as far as the other wide receivers go, you're right. Like, there needs to be guys that can step up to build that depth. And that even goes as far down to the walk-ons. I know we always, you know, talk about the guys, like whether it's a David Adolph or Brennan Tram, even in the spring game scores a touchdown. Like, I know it sounds pretty far down the line, but when you talk about a season that long, it's good to have guys at least bolstering, you know, the second team unit in practice and at least pushing a little bit, maybe even with a third team. Like, it helps to have that kind of competition always. And you never really know when a guy is going to emerge. I mean, Reece Stocksdale's another guy to throw into that conversation. But all those guys that are, you know, kind of fringe scout team versus third team, I think that depth will come in handy. And so going into this next stage of the offseason, it's really about guys stepping up into those next roles.
Well, yeah, because you don't want Bryson Rogers on the scout team if he's going to play a role for you. You know, you don't want that guy on scout team taking all those licks, you know, in on a Tuesday practice when he could be thrust in there on Saturday. So, you know, I get it. Those walk-ons, some of those guys, you know, are going to play bigger roles because the wide receiver unit's not very deep. But if you want to roll these guys, you know, you don't want those guys getting nicked up during the middle of the week. You want, if they get hurt, you want it to be in game action. And so I get it. Like, the walk-ons extended there into this conversation just because of, I don't think this is the deepest wide receiver room, but I think it's the most talented. And I think Jesse did a good job of portraying that. What else, Andy? I'm going to throw it to you now because I just said wide receiver a little depth is a little bit not concerned, but just something that they had got to work on. Your summer to-do list for the Buckeyes. I know you've got that checklist behind the scenes there with all those helmets. What's on the checklist, Andy? What do you want to see the Ohio State do this upcoming, you know, 2 or 3 month stretch before they open training camp and in the beginning of August?
Yeah, I mean, I think something for me is curious to see how they finish out this roster and get to 85 scholarships. And I think we both agree that that's probably going to include some walk-ons getting bumped up to scholarship. And I think the top of my list is I would like to see T.C. Caffey and Pat Gerd on scholarship. I think those are two guys that we're going to see contribute to this offense. Wouldn't be surprised if Patrick Gerd, you know, acts as a tight end fullback hybrid within this offense. Chip Kelly's not afraid to use a fullback. And, you know, we've seen that at Ohio State with the Mitch Rossi role. That's a guy that Pat Gerd loved watching and trying to model his game after. T.C. Caffey is someone that, you know, could actually play a role in this backfield now that Dallin Hayden is gone and is at Colorado. You've got five backs, but only four on scholarship right now. Does T.C. Caffey get that bump and become a scholarship back after kind of being on the back burner a little bit last year, maybe a bit of an afterthought after playing a small role in 2022, but then immediately tearing his ACL and having to recover and rehab from that. So those are two guys that I'd like to see, you know, be put on scholarship. A lot of times that's not really announced publicly, but we'll eventually find our way to that information. And, you know, maybe it wouldn't surprise me in camp that both of those guys are actually part of that 85, but I think that's where it starts for me. And then maybe they'll add a few players, but I do think that'll be part of the road to getting from, I think what we have now is projected as 80 to 85.
Yeah, those 80, it's only at 80, which is interesting because they lost 6 in the spring transfer portal window, all 6 on scholarship. So you went from 86 now to 80. But here's what we understand so far is from what we understand, John Furlman is not on scholarship, but Jaden Fielding, the kicker, is. So long snap or not, the kicker is. If they have one, it's possible that John Furlman could go to scholarship. It's possible that he doesn't because the NIL stuff, you can kind of play with that a little bit. Then you look at Jaden Mangum, who Ohio State is hosting on a visit this weekend, according to some Letterman Rose sources, and On3's Pete Nakos reported that as well. So he could be a part of the equation if Ohio State likes what it sees from Jaden Mangum, the Michigan State safety transfer, and Jaden Mangum likes what he hears from Ohio State. But there's no starting spot guaranteed, and he was starting at Michigan State, so we don't know how that's going to go. But that would eat up another scholarship. Then it goes to some of those guys you mentioned, whether that's a Pat Gerd or a TC Caffey, two of the lead candidates possibly, you know, if you want to give out scholarships. The other one that I would say is Inky Jones, the safety who really, really flashed at times when we were in there. He's an athletic freak, and I wouldn't be surprised if that's something that Ohio State considers. And then all those wide receivers that you mentioned already. So they've got some, you know, Nick McLarty is the punter who's going to be on scholarship when he comes here at 6'6", I think 250 pounds. Like, the, you know, we haven't given him a nickname yet, but I'm excited when we finally get there because he's way too big and Australian to not have a nickname. So we'll see what we come up with. From there, I'm going to go into, I would guess, my next thing that I think Ohio State has to accomplish, the summer to-do list, the checklist, whatever box you want to put that in. I'm going to go to the offensive line, of course, but I'm going to take it a little bit differently. Last year, Ohio State talked a lot about Carson Hinsman being in his second year and only having really one offseason in the Ohio State weight room and needing to kind of bulk up. And I think he even admitted that he wasn't really physically ready to play center in his second year, and now he's more physically ready. I think one thing that I want to see, if Tegra Shabol is going to play guard, he needs to be built like a guard, because right now I still think he's built like a tackle. If Luke Montgomery is going to take that step and compete for that guard spot, I think he still needs to bulk up a little bit and play a little bit more like a guard. And I think Carson Hinsman needs to establish himself as one of those guard options as well. I think Ohio State's got to get in that weight room, man, and especially on that offensive line. Josh Simmons, keep molding that body. Josh Fryer, keep changing your body. Depending on who you ask, people were pretty pleased with what Josh Fryer had been doing with his body and what Josh Simmons has been looking like. I just think the transformation of this offensive line into a complete unit starts in the weight room this summer, and that's one of the to-do list items for me.
Yeah, I'm going to go on the other side of the ball, stick with the trenches, though. I think the defensive tackle position, there's a lot of options there. It's similar to right guard, not as maybe imperative to figure out which one it is, because you're not looking at a starting spot. You're looking at the third defensive tackle, who's going to be the next Ty Hamilton, if you will, because Ty Hamilton and Tyleek Williams should be the starters at those defensive tackles positions. But who's that third guy that's going to emerge? And that could be partly through workouts, right, with Mick Marotti during this time between the end of spring ball and the start of actual camp, and who's really working on their bodies to make sure that they're, you know, conditioned and ready to give you that 20 to 25 snaps per game to generate that interior pressure that we saw Ty Hamilton do, the blow-up plays, you know, when you're called upon to do so in the backfield, that Ty Hamilton was so good at, almost as a fringe starter the last couple of years. So I think that for me is it going to be Jason Moore, who had a great spring and is in his second year with the program, first full year? Is it going to be Hiro Kanu that we talked about a lot of last season, towards the end of last season, especially making some plays in meaningful snaps? You know, someone like Tywan Malone, is he finally going to get it all together after switching full-time football last year and seeming to have a little bit more time to take to develop, to get into the kind of player he wants to be? Is it going to be Will Smith Jr., who came out of nowhere, it felt like, in spring and was suddenly with the second team and making plays with the third team as well? So there's a lot of options at that defensive tackle spot. Caden McDonald, I didn't even mention, who maybe should be the top of that list, as someone that we saw come on at the end of last season. And even play some offensive snaps in that kind of hybrid fullback role. So they clearly like him as a summer arrival last year who made an impact in year one. So there's a list, a laundry list of guys at that defensive tackle position. And I think there's some ground to be gained between the end of spring ball and the start of training camp to just show, hey, I'm ready for this. I'm conditioned to be in this spot, because in the trenches, a lot of it is conditioning. I mean, endurance. We talk about Tyleek Williams. That was a problem for him in the beginning part of his career. He has done a full 180 for that. And we saw him play 50-plus snaps consistently last year. And that's a big thing for earning time at that position.
Yeah, one of the guys that I'm keeping an eye on is Will Smith Jr., because he surprised us all. In the beginning of spring, he had his weight up. I think he was around 295, 300 pounds. Like, he looked bigger. He looked stronger. He looked more athletic, just kind of bigger in general. You need that. And you know, I was a little concerned about him as far as when he was a recruit, when he was at some of those June camps, but he kept progressing, attended every single camp, worked with Larry Johnson every day. And you could see how he was getting better throughout those camps. Then he comes to Ohio State, and I was a little worried about him because he was injury prone his first year. And it's like, okay, well, he's already behind. What's going to happen now? Well, then you look out there at the first of the spring, he's running with the twos. And it's like, oh my gosh, this guy is arriving already. So could that be a guy who makes that move yet again this summer, kind of wows us all? Meanwhile, you've got the absolute, you know, massive athletic freaks in Caden McDonald and Jason Moore, who at their size should not be able to move that well. But are they, I'm not going to say, maybe lack a better word, but it only means on field, not off the field things. I don't want to get my words misconstrued. Are they mature enough to play big time snaps for Ohio State on the field? You know, I don't have any question. I'm not questioning their maturity off the field. I want to make that very clear. But like, are they mature enough football wise to play 25 to 30 snaps that Larry Johnson wants from the second wave? Because you have to be able to do that. Tyleek Williams can't play 80 snaps a game for 13, 14, 15, 16 straight weeks. So I want to know if Jason Moore and Caden McDonald, as good as they look and as big and freaky as they look like what Georgia had in 2021 and 2022. Can they play like that? I don't know if they can play that level, but if they can just give you even a 15-snap burst where they look pretty good, that's going to be really good news for not only Tyleek Williams and Ty Hamilton, but that helps the edges. It helps the linebackers, which helps the secondary, and it kind of transforms the way this defense can operate.
Well, yeah, and it seems like the rotation is going to have to be extended this year because of the potential for a 16, 17-game season. So it sounds like, and with the way the schedule is structured, you have some easy games you can get out of the way where you can test some of these guys out, like you're saying, to see if they're maybe, you know, mature enough to be able to handle that kind of snap workload in game, see how they perform endurance wise, see what that looks like from first to fourth quarter. Maybe you sprinkle them in, you know, along with those ones throughout the game. And so I think that'll be a good way for them to get some data on those guys in the first month of the season before you're facing Oregon, before you have to play Penn State. You know, you're going down the line of the opponents that are really the touch points for this season. So I think that's where it'll be helpful for the way the schedule is structured. But again, yeah, like one injury. And that's the way it goes with all these positions, right? Same thing with offensive line. One injury and everything gets kind of reshuffled and who's the best player available. You know, just as much as we talk about best five line, you know, there's an element to that with the defensive line too. You know, like who's the best four to put out there? And, you know, you can look at it positionally and maybe a little bit more than you do with the offensive line. But like at the end of the day, it's who's going to get the pressure, who's going to, you know, create havoc and who's going to stop the run.
Yeah, I'm doing those progress reports right now at lettermanrow.com. I just finished the defensive tackle one earlier in the week, and I kind of had a little bit of a prediction that I wanted to get out there, so I'm just going to say it now on May 8th. Right now, it's Ty Hamilton, Tyleek Williams, and everyone else. By the end of September, I think you're going to be talking about Ty Hamilton, Tyleek Williams, and somebody. I think one of two of Caden McDonald or Jason Moore is going to emerge as like, oh yeah, that guy is also here. And he's in that top group, almost like that three-headed beast they had last year with Mike Hall, Tyleek Williams, and Ty Hamilton. I think one of Jason Moore, Caden McDonald, and maybe even both of them, the way that those guys looked at the end of spring, one of them will make that move and be in that group thanks to some performances that we like to see there in the non-conference. Andy, What's next? Your to-do list. I know that it's pages long. You got to sort through that thing. It's like a Rolodex of what the Buckeyes need to accomplish. What else is on your mind?
Yeah, I think they just need to come up with a concrete plan of what they're going to be doing in camp with these linebackers. I mean, what does this rotation look like? How do they want to manage that workload in the summer with Sonny Styles and CJ Hicks? What are they doing at the will spot? Like, is it going to be a split of the two of them like we saw a lot throughout the spring? Do you want to get into more three linebacker sets? Is that going to be more of the base that we see? Jim Knowles has repeatedly say, you know, that they'll stick with the 4-2-5, but then he's mentioned some other creative things that they might get involved with. Then again, he's talked about still not being completely done with the Jack, and you never really know if what they actually practice. So I think just getting an understanding of what they want to do, at least internally, with those linebackers, how can they maximize the talent of Sonny Styles? You know, I feel like we talk about him a little bit less this offseason just because of, you know, him not being at safety anymore, the introduction of Caleb Downs, of course, but then also the, you know, development, the real development of CJ Hicks. And, you know, I feel like he's kind of stolen the spotlight a little bit at the wheel spot. And it's been a lot of Cody and CJ talk and maybe a little bit less of Sonny this time around. But he's still a huge playmaker, at least the potential to be for this defense. How can they find a way to make sure that he's not just kind of treading water within that defense and actually maximizing his potential? I think, you know, when you're looking at the whiteboard and drawing up things, I think this is an important time to really pinpoint what you want to do, because you don't have a ton of time in camp. Like, you got to go in with an idea of, okay, this is how we're going to make the most of these practices. And I think that second level, that's got to be a priority.
Well, here's the thing, Andy, and I think this is one of the most underrated, like, not concerns, but question marks about this defense is, okay, you want Sonny Styles on the field because he's one of your best 11. They've made that crystal clear for the last almost 3 years. He started against Georgia as a true freshman when he should have still been in high school. So, like, we know he's one of the best 11. But if you play a three linebacker set with Sonny Styles, CJ Hicks, and Cody Simon, one of Jordan Hancock, Lathan Ransom, or Caleb Downs has to come off the field. I don't think any of those three deserve to come off the field. They're too good. If you play all three of those secondary members, though, one of CJ Hicks, Cody Simon, or Sonny Styles has to be on the bench. So you're kind of in between a rock and a hard place here. It's a great problem to have. But if you're taking Jordan Hancock off the field and somebody beats you on a slot fade against Sonny Styles, you're going to be pretty upset about it. And if you take Sonny Styles off the field and somebody runs right at Jordan Hancock, as good as he is in the open field, I thought tackling-wise last year, you're going to kick yourself and be like, man, why didn't we have Sonny in there? So, like, it's a good problem to have, and I'm not complaining about it, because I think there are 133 coaches in the FBS who would absolutely do crazy things to have this problem that Jim Knowles has. But it is a problem.
Yeah. What if, I mean, I'm just spitballing here. I don't get paid to coach, but I'm just thinking, like, we saw a little bit in the spring game of them playing around with the defensive ends. And I think at one point we saw JT and Jack line up on the same side. What if you move one of the defensive ends? This is not permanent, but, like, for certain packages, you could move one of the defensive ends inside. So you still have Jack and JT on the field, and then you drop down, like, you have CJ playing off the edge, and then you have one of the defensive tackles in. That's your four. And then you have your linebackers, and you don't have to take one of those defensive backs off the field. So, like, you could still be creative with this. I think that's what I'm talking about. Like, this time between now and camp, like, figure it out. Not me, right? There's probably some flaw in that. But, like, there's got to be a way to make the most of their talent and use all those players, because they all deserve to be on the field, as you said.
Maybe you should be paid to coach, Andy, after thinking of that.
I mean, we saw a little bit of it. Like, you saw that, right, where they had Jack Sawyer inside, and I think it generated good pressure on the one play I'm thinking about. And I think that could be a good tool to have, and also makes those defensive ends more versatile. I mean, that helps their draft stock. You play inside and out. I mean, so I think there's a lot to be said about that. I mean, it's like the double eagle thing. Kind of the inverse of that is what Jim Knowles was talking about, right? Having JT and Jack Sawyer potentially playing some outside linebacker and moving them back. So, like, I think they're really exploring all these options. But again, like, when it comes to camp, you have to know what you're doing. Cause it felt like with the Jack conversation last year, it was like, we'll get to it. We'll get to it. Yeah, we'll get to it. And then they never got to it. So I feel like if they're going to get to it, it's now, and figure it out on the whiteboard now, and then go and actually apply it. And we'll know very early in camp if that's going to be something they play with or not. Because you can't waste all that time. I mean, you only have so many practices in the summer.
One of my other predictions that I've been thinking about the last couple of weeks is that my prediction is that Ohio State will show a tremendous amount of that double eagle in one of the three non-conference games, and they'll show it like 25 snaps and make everybody flip out and think that it's going to happen, and make Oregon sweat about it, and make Penn State want to prepare for it, and they won't show it again until the week before the Michigan game. And then they'll make Michigan think about it for a week, and they'll make Michigan game plan against it, and then you won't see it at all against Michigan. So that's my prediction, because I think that is something that Ohio State would definitely do. It's something we've seen them do in the past, where they put some stuff in the week before the Michigan game, make you prepare for it, and then don't bring it out. Just something I've been thinking about. Last thing, that I think is on this to-do list. And then I'll give you one more after this, but mine might be yours. Quarterback. You cannot go into training camp with five quarterbacks and do what you did in the spring where you divvied up all these reps and it was sunshine and rainbows because you were teaching everybody everything and you were getting everybody comfortable and allowing everybody to take their reps. No, that's thrown out the window. You got games to prepare for. And I know you got three non-conference games and a bye week and a potential scrub game against a Michigan State team that I'm still kind of wishy-washy on. But you've got to divvy up reps like you're preparing for a run at the college football playoff because you are. And so this summer, you've got to figure out how to manage a five-man quarterback room without just saying, well, we're going to give these guys a lot of reps like we did in the spring. You can't do that. So this summer's got to be a time where you figure out what your quarterback room is and how to design a plan for each quarterback, knowing that not all of them are getting equal reps.
Yeah, I think we'd all pay to be in that quarterback room and know what they were told really in between the end of spring ball and now, because they're all still there. And clearly they bought in, which is great for the team, but there must have been some kind of pitch to them that there's an opportunity to not only develop, but, you know, play. And I'm not saying they're going to have a multi-quarterback system. It's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying there's got to be an open competition. Otherwise, I don't know why people would stay, all five of them at least. And so we knew the competition was still going, but like, as far as reps go, I mean, you'd have to be at least in knowledge, like knowing that I'm going to get, hey, this amount of opportunity. So I'm curious kind of what you're saying, because I agree with you. Like, they need to find a last year was a little bit too much of will they, won't they with one guy. And then it was just so balanced with number of reps that it felt like they could never really find, you know, a gap of who was better one versus the other. But at the same time, it feels like there must have been some kind of selling point of like, there will be opportunities for all of you. So like, I don't know how that will shake out exactly, but I agree. It's critical because as we've talked about this whole show, like, you don't have a million practices when it comes to August. Like, I mean, you got to go, because before you know it, you're game planning for week one. I don't care who the week one opponent is. It's still a game. So yeah, they got to figure something out with that process and honestly hope that someone separates. You know, it's almost, you're hoping that one guy really just makes it easy on you. And eventually that's got to happen.
Yeah, because you have to prepare for week one. Because the last time Joe Moorhead was in Ohio Stadium, he was coaching Oregon. And yeah, there's people watching this stream that don't even remind it of what happened in that game. I know it's a different scheme, but still, kind of something to think about. So I'm not afraid of Akron, I promise. Andy, anything else? What's on the to-do list? That big, big, massive binder you got that Ohio State.
Yeah, I think this is another position that's just loaded with players, and trying to navigate reps is difficult because, like, I think maybe we don't talk about it enough. We talked about it after the spring game because that was the big moment of like, oh, like zone six versus BIA, and the cornerbacks played really well in the spring game. But it's just yet again, like, another reminder of like how much talent they have on the outside, especially. You know, even Jermaine Matthews, maybe he can fit in that backup nickel spot. You mentioned Jordan Hancock. Like, I think people forget that he wasn't starting all of last year. He just made such a big impact down the stretch, especially when Lathan Ransom was out. Like, people in your head, it's like so easy to think about those interceptions and, you know, the big plays he made, the thunders and the forced fumble. Like, I feel like that all pops up, but, you know, he wasn't getting 60 snaps per game most of last season. You know, what does that look like with that nickel spot? How do you navigate that with Jermaine Matthews, whose play demands that he's on the field, but you've got Davis and Igbinosin, you've also got Denzel Burke, and then, by the way, you have Calvin Simpson-Hunt, who looks pretty darn good after now being here for close to a full year at this point. And then, you know, by the way, Aaron Scott Jr. like might be one of the first people to lose his black stripe in training camp, at least if you're asking me. And then we haven't even seen Bryce West play yet. I mean, he's been some sort of injury in the spring. So, like, there's so much talent in the cornerback room. And it's not something you really have to worry about in terms of portal, because that's closed and you're good with the roster. But as far as, you know, trying to create a runway for these guys to feel like they want to come back next year, I mean, that's always in the head. That's Ryan Day's job, right? Like, find ways to – that's why the beginning of last season was so tricky, because he was trying to find ways to get guys time, because in the back of his head, he knows if they're not going to play at all this year, they might not come back. And it's not because you don't like the player. It's because you're trying to win games. And I think that balance in that cornerback room is really tricky because it's so deep right now. But, you know, all it takes is one season of some maybe discontent and maybe guys leave. So I think that's where my last kind of point is, of like, if you can try to find out a way to form some kind of rotation that makes sense, but also gets guys time.
Yeah, you've also got a safety room that you got to figure out, because some of those guys missed camp. Some of those guys now transferred out. You're pretty thin there, but you like what you have. It's interesting. That secondary is interesting. It's one of the biggest storylines of this entire offseason, I think, just the dynamics between the secondary and the rest of that defense, because we know what they have, but we kind of at the same time don't really know what they have in that second group. So it's interesting. And it's something to definitely watch. Anything else, Andy, before we get out of here, that's on your mind about the Ohio State men's football program?
No, but, you know, I think, like, this whole conversation, I've just been thinking all it takes is one injury and all of this kind of blows up, right? In the sense that they won't be able to recover from it. But from the conversation standpoint of the way you look at the defense or the offense, or, and it's not that we're rooting for injuries, it's just that that's something that Ohio State generally, at least in the trenches the last couple of years, has been fortunate not to have one of those big season-ending blows. But it's always something that you got to be prepared for, and they are. I mean, that's like Chip Kelly said after the spring game. We're not looking for five starters up front. We're looking for 10 starters on the offensive line. And obviously, if you can find that, that's a great situation to be in, and probably a situation that no other team will find themselves in. But the point is that you need to have a lot of depth. And that's kind of just the, you know, caveat to this entire conversation, is that, like, one injury and a lot of the things we just talked about completely changed. Like you just mentioned, safety, you know, one injury at safety. Do you move Sonny Styles back? You know, like, that's something you'd have to think about, right? So, like, it throws a lot of things into the fire. And I think that that's the most interesting thing that, you know, we can speculate about right now, but you almost don't want to, because, again, you don't root for injuries. But it's the big part of this conversation. It's almost like the elephant in the room that, you know, with a season this long, feels inevitable with whatever position.
Isn't it so weird, Andy, that this is the deepest and most talented team in the country in a lot of people's eyes? I'm seeing, you know, some preseason top 30s, 25 start to roll out from these national sites, and they all have Ohio State at the very top because they're the most talented and the deepest team in the country. Yet they're five scholarships short right now. Like, isn't that just weird? Like, just this weird dynamic of, like, yes, the team is insanely talented. The depth is everywhere. Oh, by the way, they still have five scholarships they could give out. But that's just how this sport works nowadays.
Well, and also remember, it was just a few years ago during the COVID years where there was no 85 threshold. You could literally have 110 guys on scholarship if you wanted to. It feels like, yeah, that's a far cry from now, right? And we're starting to finally be done with the COVID year. I mean, like, guys still have it here and there, but it's not nearly as prevalent as it used to. And things are, like, starting to get back to normal roster-wise. So, like, I do think that is part of this equation, but it is interesting. It's a good point. You got a really talented roster, but maybe that's the spot you want to be in. You want to reward some guys that have been through the grind of the program. And, you know, we know how much they talk about someone like Xavier John. They take pride in that. I think that, especially with the emphasis they're trying to put on special teams and the way they've restructured that, you know, maybe that's a good thing to be able to reward some guys, to make it an incentive. It could be a good spot to be in, actually.
Still got a few COVID guys. I think G. Scott Jr. is on the COVID year. I think Cody Simon's on the COVID year. I believe Seth McLaughlin is using the COVID year this year.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Will Howard is using the COVID year. So, yeah, there's some COVID year guys. But we're going to end it on this. Life is good. Thank you, Ed. I agree. Life is good. Life is good for Ohio State because the Buckeyes are becoming the number one team in the country as we speak. Slowly but surely, people are coming around to the idea that Ohio State is the best team in college football heading into the summer. We just went through a big, long list of everything that Ohio State needs to accomplish this summer. If you want full lists and all the coverage of that Letterman Row provides about the Ohio State Buckeyes, head to lettermanrow.com right now. This special offer, get your first 2 months for just $1. That's right, 2 months for $1 when you use the code OSU1. That's a YouTube special. You can't get that anywhere else. That's right. A special offer of lettermanrow.com. $1 for your first 2 months. Alex Gleitman over there today had a big update on five-star offensive tackle David Sanders. Matt Parker's got a lot of coverage coming about what Ohio State just did over the weekend and what they're going to do in the June camps. We've got a lot more stuff coming from Andy and I and Tim May, the 41-year vet, over on the team side. And we hope to see you guys over at lettermanrow.com. We'll be back here to record another video at some point soon. But until then, head to lettermanrow.com. Get that special offer, $1 for your first 2 months. We'll see you guys over at lettermanrow.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.